Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, we spend 90% of our time indoors breathing in indoor air. My next guest, Professor John McComber from Harvard Business School, argues that we've ignored indoor air quality for far too long and focused too much on external air quality and excessive insulation of buildings. He's the author of Healthy Buildings, How Indoor Spaces Drive Performances and Productivity, and he spoke virtually at the annual conference of the Society of Chartered Surveyors in Ireland, and he joins me now on the line. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, John. So I know healthy buildings was something that you focused on a lot long before COVID, and you've been arguing that indoor air quality is vital for health and indeed for productivity in our office buildings. Can you tell us a little bit more about this concept of what a healthy building is?
Sure, I'd be happy to, and thank you for including me, and it was a pleasure to speak at the conference this morning. So there's some anecdotal evidence that people have had of sick buildings. If you think of Legionnaire's disease, or you think of mold in the building, or you think of people getting headaches because there are chemicals off-gassing from new carpets or something like that. We've done more research around cognition, and in particularly how well you think. And, you know, you can think sort of, I guess I'm a little tired if the conference room is kind of stuffy, or gee, the airplane feels kind of stale, I'm kind of tired there. But that hadn't been quantified in the past. So we did double-blind research with workers working in a controlled environment doing their regular office work, but the researchers would then change the levels of carbon dioxide, volatile organic compounds, and small particles, PM2.5s. And then the workers would do a short cognition test two or three times a day. And we were really struck by the differences in performance and things like strategy, memorization, tactical kind of work for everybody, even measured against themselves. And so my colleagues at the School of Public Health pointed this out. I'm a real estate guy, and I said, we're really missing the boat if we're spending all this time thinking about outdoor air quality when people spend their time indoors and the air is worse, and when we're spending all this time and effort to save every last little bit of energy, when sometimes that means the buildings are so tight that you don't get fresh air and you get sick and don't perform as well as you could. So that was the genesis of this, even prior to COVID.
Yeah, and of course then this data is vital in the COVID era, isn't it? Because I know it was revealed recently that long-term exposure to fine particulate matter could increase the risk of contracting and dying from COVID-19 by up to 7%. So clean air really matters in the fight against COVID.
Absolutely.
So if that's the case, and we know it, and your research there is really interesting in terms of productivity as well and our general sense of well-being in a building, how do we go about making our buildings healthier?
So there are 9 foundations to a healthy building, and that we proposed at the Harvard School of Public Health with my colleagues. They're similar to ones proposed by the World Green Building Council and others. And some of them are the natural ones you think about, like water quality, noise, security, dust, things like that. People often don't really think about indoor air quality and ventilation, which are related but different. So ventilation is how much fresh air is there. Indoor air quality is what's the measurable quality. Partly people don't think about it because you can't see it. If you have a puddle in your house, you see it. If you have termites in your house, you can see them. You don't know if you have bad air. So the absolute number one answer is to open the windows. I mean, unless you're in a forest fire situation or a really bad smoggy city, most modern buildings are way too tight. I mean, if you live in a 200-year-old house that's really drafty and has all natural materials, not as much of an issue. But modern buildings tend to be extremely tight and to have a lot of synthetic materials, so the air quality is not good. And we can talk later about levels of ventilation and also about measurement and how do you know, if you like.
Yeah, and I might ask you about that in a second, but I suppose the reason when we're building our houses now, new houses, and as you say, they're really tight and the ventilation is, I don't know how the ventilation is, but the insulation is really extraordinary. But we're doing that for energy and for climate, aren't we? So that we're low energy and we're using less heating and we're using less electricity, we're using less gas or whatever it might be to heat our homes because the heat is being retained in the building. So if we start to open all the windows, does that cause a problem from a climate perspective?
Yes, it's a really interesting interrelated issue. So they go together, of course, and the answer is to have more efficiency, particularly around heating. So where I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the grid is about 60 or 70% from renewable sources now, mostly from hydro for us, and for you, it's for wind. So as the grid gets greener and greener, it actually becomes more efficient to heat your home with electricity. Just plug it in. Right now, I have natural gas in my house and a boiler, and there's tremendous amounts of heat that are wasted. So the two phenomena go together, because we don't want to make the outdoor air worse by burning more more fossil fuels. But we also don't want to pursue just every last penny of energy. So part of our research with commercial landlords that can also be applied in hospitals or apartment buildings is to think about the energy components alone. So if you think of a typical thought business like a law firm or architecture firm, about half of their revenue is taken up in payroll. And about 20% is taken up in rent, and about 5% is the energy. So energy is easy to measure, and somebody gets a pat on the back for saving basically 5% of 5%, which is 0.02%. Mm. In the meantime, we're missing all this productivity. So if people are in buildings that perform better than the absolute legal minimum, and they're getting more work done, doing one more interview, writing one more article, making one more sales call, and having 10 fewer sick days, that bottom line, that benefit goes straight to the bottom line of the company and can be shared with the employees or with the landlord or with the company.
Okay.
So the energy thing is short-sighted.
Okay, really interesting. Just finally then, John, if people are listening at home and they're wondering how the air quality is in their own homes, how do they go about checking that, and what should they be looking for, or what should they be aiming for?
Well, this is a field that has really advanced in the last 4 or 5 years. So 10 years ago, if you wanted to know about air quality in a building or outside, you had to get an industrial hygienist. They came out with a big tank. They had a bunch of beakers and things. They go off to the lab and they come back, and the information is top secret. Like if you're in an apartment building, they only tell the building manager. Now you can go to any online electronics retailer, and there are dozens of individual air quality monitors that you can buy. They're maybe about $100, less than that in euros. And they, in particular, they'll tell you the natural ones that are like temperature and humidity, but also the other sort of big three are carbon dioxide, which is a really good proxy for how clean your air is, and also for that's the one that has the biggest correlation with cognition. Second, volatile organic compounds, or VOCs, which are generally the chemicals that are off-gassed from new carpets and paint and things like that. And the third is small particulates, the PM2.5, which you mentioned. Those are the ones that lodge in your lungs.
Okay.
So, the interesting thing, there's kind of two interesting things here. One is that you can do this yourself. The other is that most of these things tie into the cloud somewhere. So there's a possibility for you in real time to share the air quality information in your studio, which is probably very tight because it's soundproof and has mm-hmm. all these doors and foam and everything. And your allies and your friends and their apartments, and people can know in real time whether their apartment has good air quality, whether their office has good air quality, or you can send this off with your kid to school okay. and see what the air quality is. It democratizes this information and takes it out of the hands of these building managers.
Look, that's all fascinating. Just very quickly before I let you go, we have a text here, John, saying, Sarah, we have enough anxiety just now without having to worry about indoor pollution on top of everything else. I'm sure my house is full of pollution, says this listener. Would the best advice be to that person, John, open the windows as a start?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. Open the windows in the middle of winter. It's worth it, is what Professor John McComber has to say from Harvard Business School.